Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line is Jim Ozarski. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This podcast, I feel like, Jim, I am just a terrible harbinger of what the Bucks are up to, because there are days we do this podcast and they've lost a couple games in a row, maybe to lesser teams, and they're injured, and it's like, oh, the Bucks are struggling. And then they go out and beat the triumvirate of the Heat, Bulls, and Phoenix Suns, which puts them right back in the thick of everything. And then there are days where I'm like I am now. Oh my gosh, they just beat the Heat, Bulls, and Suns. They're amazing. And then they go out and lose a couple games. So it's been a little bit of a roller coaster of a season, but right now, at a high, the Bucks just beat three pretty high-profile opponents in succession. And Jim, I know you were there to see a lot of it. We'll start with the most recent of those three. That was on Sunday against Phoenix at Pfizer Forum. They're back for the first time, of course, since the NBA Finals. Met earlier this year in the Valley. The Suns won that game handily. This time, the Bucks score a bit of a vengeance. They come back from a deficit. Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton especially is awesome. 44 points, with Giannis having, by his standards, a down day. It fouled out by the end. But caveat, the Suns were playing without both Chris Paul and Devin Booker, their two stars. And then, they were nicked up in some other areas as well. So I guess the takeaway is good on the Bucks. They were able to win a game that I guess probably should have won, as you look at it that way. But it's not necessarily likely that they're going to rematch in the NBA Finals again, in as much as it's likely for any two teams to meet in the NBA Finals. But what did you take away from that game? Do you feel like the Bucks, after these three games, are, I've used this expression before, have turned a corner and are really back to playing their best basketball?
Yeah, I don't. It's so funny, JR. I mean, there's a month and a half left of games, and I still don't know if we know what this team is going to be come playoff time. Even with these wins, I think what it shows is, look, they're champions, right? You know, they're going to turn it over at crazy times and with weird decisions, and then Chris Middleton comes down and is just clutch, right? The guy that took a star turn in the Eastern Conference Finals. Drew Holiday, right, has just sort of dominated fourth quarters against Miami, Chicago, and Phoenix. But yet, you also look at it, you're like, wow, they probably should have handled the Suns without Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and Cam Johnson. Like, Campaign is a nice backup point guard. Landry Shamet, you know, is a nice reserve wing. Like, should those dudes have been winning by 10 and needing, you know, essentially being up until deep in the fourth quarter? I don't know, right? And like, you know, the Miami game, they were mostly whole. I don't think Miami felt Kyle Lowry's absence until the final seconds. So it makes you think about that, right? Like, wow, okay, these teams. Chicago, second night of a back-to-back, road at home. You know, they flew in from Atlanta early in the morning. They don't have their best wing defenders, and they give the Bucks all they can handle. But they won the games, and they weren't doing that. They've won four straight. It's one of their longest win streaks of the season, JR, and I think you have to feel good about that. So the Suns game, I think if you can win when Giannis is in foul trouble, scores 19 points, I think that's a good thing, because it just shows you can win in different ways. And the other two of the big three, who often get overshadowed, Chris Middleton, 44 points, right? Like, that's a season high. I think people, it's just a little reminder, I guess, on how good he can be when needed.
I completely agree with you. That's exactly how I looked at it too, because we've talked about how Drew Holiday has sort of become the most indispensable player, other than Giannis, who's, of course, their superstar. But even when Giannis is out, if Drew Holiday is capable of playing, and Chris Middleton too, but when Drew is on his game, the Bucks are probably going to win, certainly way more often than not. And Drew had some turnovers this week too, so it wasn't like it was all sunshine and roses for him, but he's been really good. And then Chris Middleton is just sort of that thing you take for granted. And Lord knows we talked about it enough, but he pops out for 44 points. It's a reminder, like, that's the guy who took over when Giannis got hurt in last year's playoffs. He needed him, and he can be pretty special. And it's that's what championship teams have. They have those, like, you know, lions in waiting in case something happens, in case Giannis has a bad game or Drew isn't quite, you know, clicking like he normally is. They've got yet another option. Yes, so that was a nice win for Bucks fans. I think the Friday night game against the Bulls was probably just as satisfying. Jim, my dad doesn't pay too much attention to the NBA, to Milwaukee Bucks basketball. So when he messages me something, I know it's something that may catch more than just the average fan's eyes. The end of that game, that Bucks-Bulls game, the Bucks got a surge late, really finished that game strong. We were just talking about how they were struggling to finish games, and then they absolutely finished a game with a flourish against Chicago. And my dad texts me, he's like, who is Javon Carter and DeAndre Bembry, and why are they on the floor when there's like 20 seconds left? And the Bucks are trying to hold on to a one-possession win. And I had to explain to him, well, they were brought here for their defense. That's, I guess, what they're trying to do. Wes Matthews was hurt. Pat Connaughton, as we know, was hurt. They need bodies. They need defensively reliable players in crunch time. But I did think that was sort of interesting. It was eye-opening. It certainly caught my eye when they had the big jump ball and those two guys are there. I'd be curious what your thoughts are of those two guys to this point. I think they probably provided what we'd expect. We've seen more of Javon Carter than I guess I thought we would. But defensively, those guys are solid, and you know they're not gonna light up the scoreboard at all. But they are the types of guys that you rely on at the end of a very important game against a team you're tied with in the standings in the Chicago Bulls. So that definitely caught my attention.
Yeah, we spoke about this a little bit, JR, when Javon Carter and DeAndre Bembry were signed. Like, you know, Bucks fans might see more of them now, right, than in the playoffs when George Hill, we believe, will be back, and Pat Connaughton are back. I mean, the minutes are going to go away. But until then, yeah, I mean, Mike Budenholzer wants to deploy those guys to pressure ball handlers, give Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton a little bit of a breather. You know, Javon Carter can give you 94 feet of defense. DeAndre Bembry is going to give you 94 feet of defense, right? I think that's one of the reasons they were able to win these four straight games is just, look, LaMelo Ball didn't turn the ball over, but it took him all of the 8 seconds to get over the timeline. And that just changes the way offense works when you've only got, you know, 16 seconds or so to set up your offense. I mean, even look, we look at the game against Miami, JR, and yes, no Kyle Lowry, but it's Drew Holiday and Bobby Portis blitzing on Tyler Hero. It's you go back to the Brooklyn game. It's Javon Carter, you know, forcing an 8 seconds on Goran Dragic. Like that those guys allow Mike Budenholzer to do a little bit more that pressure style defense to, you know, ease his half court, you know, coverages a little bit. So that's why they're here. We knew that coming in. I guess it was just more of how will we see them used. I mean, I was a little surprised Bembry didn't play as much against Chicago, but credit to Chris Middleton, JR. I mean, he was asked to defend Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. I mean, he didn't get a break on that end, you know? So I think that's why they're here. We're seeing that. It's just a matter of matchups, I guess, until Connaughton and Hill are back. And I believe Hill will be back soon. That's what Mike Budenholzer said. He feels maybe this week, JR, we'll start to see him on the court. Maybe, you know, Golden State for sure. But, yeah, those guys were signed for defense, and we are seeing that.
Let's stay on the injuries for a little bit. George Hill's obviously one of them. The other one that we check in with pretty much every episode of the podcast now is Brook Lopez. He's back at practice a little bit more than he was before, looking for some contact. I believe the Wisconsin Herd was maybe going to get involved on trying to get him some like live action, which I'd be curious to know a little more about. But you I don't want to say predicted this, but we sort of mapped this out a little while back, that he has doctors that he visits with on the West Coast. and the Bucks are about to go back to the West Coast. This Saturday, they'll be in Golden State to face in Golden State, in California, in Oakland, or San Francisco. I can never quite remember how things work geographically there, but they'll be there to face the Warriors on Saturday. Then they're against the Jazz, the Kings. So that is a trip out west. It's not specifically to LA or anything, but you could see how Brook would get maybe the next sort of round of updates on his injury, and maybe they have a plan in place then and can tell us when they think Brook's going to be back. It sounds like it's gone pretty much how you envisioned it would. Anything you want to add to that? Like, does it seem closer, further away than that? How would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the herd, and Mike Boonholzer said in Chicago that basically the G League affiliate is going to move its operations to Milwaukee this week.
I love it.
It just happens to be a break in their schedule. They don't actually play until the weekend as well. So
this is like hiring a scout team, having an organizational scout team. It's great.
Yeah. So aside from just the logistics of bussing those guys down from Oshkosh and putting them up in whatever hotel rooms or, you know, across the street in the apartments. I mean, they're there for Brook Lopez
Brook squad.
Yeah. And Bud kind of laughed about that. Cause I asked him, I'm like, you're not really going to send this guy to Oshkosh, are you? And he's like, yeah, no, I think they're going to come to Brook.
This is how you know you're a celebrity, when they will bring an entire team of people to you a couple hours away rather than sending you to them. I love that operation.
Yeah. So it's, and that's important, right? I mean, because how do you know when a guy is going to be ready to play unless he can have people lean on that back, right? Post him up. Can he work through contact? Like, this is a big step in Brook Lopez being cleared to play NBA games. Is he going to play 18 minutes of a quote unquote full court practice? I don't know how, you know, practices are structured in this way. I'm just sort of, you know, throwing out a theory, I guess. And then, okay, then he needs to go and sit for 5 minutes on the bench, right? Like he would in a regular game. Okay. Now he's got to get up. How does that feel coming back? And then he does that. And then, okay, what does his back feel like the next day when it's a day off, right? So these are all things that are part of the rehab process. And JR, I was so used to this with football. And I think people just sort of take for granted, I guess, the idea of injuries and rehab. And, oh, he practiced. And what does it feel like? I mean, but that's all part of it. And maybe he gets through this week. And I don't know. I mean, we didn't know he was going to be cleared to practice during the All-Star break. I mean, that was maybe a hope for the Bucks. I'm guessing that if he can make the road trip to the West Coast, that means he's really close to a return. Cause they're not going to practice out there, Jared. Like maybe there's a day they could practice, but they're not practicing like that. It's more of like a walkthrough and you run some sets, you break the lactic acid up a little bit. So if he makes the road trip, I would say that then that week of practice went really well for him physically, and he is on the verge of a return. I would think maybe if he doesn't make the trip, they need him to stay to work a little harder. So regardless, these are all good steps for Brook Lopez. And, you know, John Horst said, you know, when they made the Ibaka deal, that they want him to be able to play a few games in April before he, you know, is in for the playoffs. I don't know if this has accelerated that timeline right now, but I would say him doing this it means he's closer to playing games, JR, than maybe we thought. But definitely it's a good sign for Brook Lopez and the Bucks.
So you just mentioned Serge Ibaka. Give me your impressions on what you've seen of him so far. There were times early I wasn't sure it was going to be comparable, and then there have been times recently where I think, okay, he's obviously another guy that's brought in with a defensive, you know, defensive mindset. So what are you seeing from him?
Yeah, it's interesting. Because we mentioned this when he was acquired, there's a little bit of the PJ Tucker question of, Is he hurt? What was he asked to do? Was he sort of just biding his time in with the Clippers, who are kind of a middling team without their stars? They're not quite kind of what we thought. I mean, look, and he's also coming off back surgery. So, you know, Ibaka's playing about 15 minutes a game with the Clippers. He's around 20 right now for the Bucks. I honestly, JR, I don't know if that first stretch of games, he was still working into some kind of shape. Because he looked a little slow. I mean, he was getting caught. Look, when you're a big man getting called for the sheer volume of fouls he was getting called for, with his defensive reputation, right? That's not a Boogie Cousins thing. Like, Boogie was, like, in that, basically, that Thanasis category of, like, a foul per minute, right? Like that was and Boogie was clearly slow. Serge, I didn't know how to take that. I think the 14-point, 10-rebound effort against Phoenix was encouraging. I think he looked a little quicker. So maybe as he kind of ramps up a little bit. Look, he hasn't played 20 minutes a game, you know, in a year, right, after that back surgery. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Whatever the minutes are going to be when Lopez returns, we'll find out. But I think he looked a little better here of late. We'll see this next week if it continues to sort of improve, if he still looks a little springier, a little bouncier. I think he had two blocks against Phoenix, which was big. That was a bigger lineup than Chicago. And that's what you have him for, JR. Really, like, look, you mentioned the Suns game when they got pounded in Phoenix. That was when the trade was made. So Ibaka wasn't with the team. And the Suns just beat the crap out of Giannis and really dominated the inside with the pick and roll. I think they had 40 points in the paint just with their three bigs alone. Biombo and JaVale McGee did not have that kind of game. Now, I know there was no Chris Paul and no Devin Booker, but like they still didn't have that sort of dominating inside presence. Was that because Serge Ibaka was there and looked a little better? Maybe, you know? So I think that's what they hope to see. And, you know, look, Cleveland, Boston, these Eastern teams, man, you know, Miami's going to bring it. So that's what he's here for. And if he can sort of look as good as he did against Phoenix going forward, that's only good things.
Let's talk about Miami, that third game that in this stretch, the earliest of the three, it ends on a running bank shot by Drew Holiday with, I think, 1.2 seconds left to tip the scales and give the Bucks a really nice win over the Heat. You know, I've been on the Cavaliers for a while as a team that matches up really well with the Bucks and is a concern. Cavs have been waning a little bit in the standings of late. I'm starting to maybe not, have Boston's moved ahead of them into the five spot, so I'm maybe not as concerned, though that could easily be a first-round matchup still. But the Miami Heat are still the team everyone is chasing in the East and looking absolutely more and more like the team that will be the number one seed in the East, so any success against them is noteworthy. Of course, the Bucks were at home, and you'd expect them to win any home game regardless of opponents, so that's something to weigh in as well. If these two teams meet, Heat Bucks, you just saw Milwaukee get the better of them. How do you feel like that matchup plays out?
Yeah, it's that's probably the question, right? Look, the Heat gave the Bucks all they could handle without Kyle Lowry. And I sort of mentioned it before. The Heat probably didn't really miss him until the final moments when they couldn't get the ball in, you know, or Tyler Hero was the one being tasked to bring the ball up against pressure. And look, Tyler is having a resurgent year. He's probably going to be the sixth man of the year, and deservedly so. But I think the fact that he was able to be pressured and turn the ball over and not really handle that, I mean, that's the difference, I think, between Tyler Hero and Kyle Lowry, right? Credit to the Bucks defensively. Credit, honestly, to the officials at the end of that game for letting Giannis and Jimmy Butler, two of the league superstars, to just go for a loose ball, right? And let that happen. So a lot of credit, I think, all the way around in terms of just letting the game be played the way it should be. You know, even Drew Holiday throwing that shoulder into Gabe Vincent. I mean, that was that's legal contact. It was reviewed and whatever. But yeah, I think Miami is going to be interesting for the Bucks because on one hand, JR, I don't think the Heat are the boogeyman anymore after last year.
Right.
And it's interesting. So I don't think that the Bucks fear them, yet Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, they're all NBA, they're superstars, have been in a spot where the Bucks like sort of want them to beat them, as opposed to like Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson were a problem, you know? And Jimmy Butler was not a problem. And Bam Adebayo really wasn't a problem, like offensively speaking. So I don't know. Like, I think the Heat and Spoelstra are going to give the Bucks all they can handle. But if they have to make 21 threes four times, like the math of that doesn't add up against this Bucks team. You know what I mean, JR? Like the one-off, sure. Could they do it twice? Probably. But that, like, Jimmy Butler can't go 2 of 15 or Bam Adebayo can't score 12 points, right? And so that's what makes that Bucks-Heat series kind of interesting if they were to meet up. I don't think the Bucks are afraid of anyone anymore. Like, they're not – Brooklyn doesn't – I mean, we've seen it. Like they pounded the Nets when the Nets were as close to full strength as they could be, right? They're not afraid of the Nets. They're not afraid of the Heat. And it's just a matter of does Jimmy Butler – pull a DeMar DeRozan and make 10 of his 15 mid-rangers. I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it since the bubble, right? So I don't know. I don't know if I think the Heat, I'm not going to discount them and just say the Bucks are going to walk over them, JR, but I think if you're a Bucks fan, you can look at some of those things and feel okay about a potential matchup as opposed to, you know, if Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons finally plays, whenever that is, and Kyrie is allowed to play, like that might be more of an issue, like over a 7-game series than maybe the Heat. I don't know. I think the Bucks have just proven they can beat that team.
Jimmy Butler scoreless. Is that, I'm trying to remember the stat exactly. Scoreless over the last 36 minutes of the game. Was that right?
Yeah, he did not have a good day. And, you know, Mike Budenholzer was deferential and said, you know, Jimmy was reading the game and reading the defense and trying to be a facilitator. But I mean, look, man, he was 2 of 14. Like, that's not for 6 points. Like, his plus minus was minus 21. That's not, you know, that's not good. Now, there's really not much of a comp. Like, the only other game he played against the Bucks was the season opener for Miami back when they beat the Bucks by 40. And look, he was 6 of 10 in that game. He went to the line 11 times. That was one of the reasons why the Bucks were run by 40. And that was there, I think there were some external circumstances that led to that sort of game against the Heat. But that's the difference. Yeah, like they defended Jimmy Butler. And I think the fact that Mike Budenholzer now will just toss Giannis on him at times, like, which he didn't do, right? Back in the boat. Like, I think we're past that too. Like, I think it's like, oh, Jimmy might be a problem. Okay, Giannis, you go handle that for a bit. You know, that's part of it as well.
The Milwaukee Bucks, if you're listening to this on 97.3 The Game on Monday night, they play tomorrow against the Oklahoma City Thunder. If you're listening to this podcast as you normally do, that's tonight in Oklahoma City. They then come back for a back-to-back again at Pfizer Forum at home against the Atlanta Hawks, a team that they, of course, played in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but a team that has not put itself in the playoff position this year. And then they're out west, like we said, face off with two of the top four teams in the Western Conference. It's the Warriors on Saturday. It's the Jazz on Monday on the road, followed by a matchup with the Kings, then the Timberwolves. So some intriguing battles coming up. But Jim, as we said before, we started recording. The way this season has gone, the ebbs and the flows, I could just see them having problems with the Thunder and Hawks after winning four in a row, including three games against some pretty top-flight competition. So I think if they get through Thunder, Hawks unscathed and looking the part, I'm going to feel really, really good about it, because then I know it's not just this was a good week. It's, okay, the Bucks team that we know and love is really, really back at this point.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know if OKC rookie Josh Giddey is healthy as we record this. I mean, look, the Thunder, you know, they gave the Bucks a little bit of an issue, right? And the one time, I think one time was a blowout. The other time it was maybe close. I don't recall. Like, the Bucks should just pound OKC. Let's just say Oklahoma State's got some intriguing young players, some athletes. They're kind of fun to watch, without a doubt. But yeah, the Bucks should win that game. Now, coming home against Atlanta, that's usually where your vets get the soreness issue. And so I don't know who will be available for the Bucks on Wednesday against the Hawks. So that one, I have a hard time just saying they should beat Atlanta. Cause look, Atlanta's fighting for their playoff lives. The Bucks may, you know, Giannis, Chris, and Drew, or combinations of the three, may have sorenesses that doesn't allow them to play on that back-to-back. So I don't know about that one, but I do feel like go to Oklahoma City, handle business on the business trip, win five in a row. Don't sort of stall your own momentum like they did at home against Detroit when they crapped the bed and kind of ended that six game losing streak. And we all were like, where's the third quarter? Excuse me. Look, I'm choking about it. Like, don't choke in this. Don't choke. Don't choke in Oklahoma City. Just do the thing, win the game. Atlanta, that's a schedule issue, right? So whatever with that one. And get yourself in a good spot, I think, going on the road. You're going to play a Golden State team who I think JR is slumping again. That was like when the Warriors came to Milwaukee and the Bucks pounded them on the nationally televised game. I think the Warriors were off, whatever. Like, you're going on the road to a tough place to play against a Western Conference title contender. Feel good about that. Feel healthy going into that game, and start that West Coast trip in a good note, because you've got, what, the Dante DiVincenzo revenge season coming up in Sacramento and another Western Conference team in Utah. So, yeah, JR, handle business in OKC. Be healthy, whatever that means, against the Hawks. And be in a good spot going into some really good Western Conference teams and a unique game against the Kings, you know, where you're going to have to outscore a bunch of people.
All right, let's get to our weekly features that we have every week on the Point Forward podcast. We're going to start with One Quick Buck.
Desmond Mason. Woo-hoo! With authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room.
You gotta be kidding me, Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
The mailman in your face, Brad Lojas.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One Quick Buck.
Jim, this one's a little bit of a stretch to make it topical, but I am a big college basketball guy, as you probably know. A big championship week guy. I love it when the little schools are fighting for their berth in the NCAA tournament, and we enter the week with just a couple tickets have been punched, including Loyola. Murray State is in, as is Longwood. Longwood is a first-time NCAA tournament qualifier. They have not been a Division I program for all that long, but this is the first time that they've been since elevating from D2 about, I think, like 15 years ago now. They are headed to the dance. There are not many high-profile recruits from Longwood, or I shouldn't say high-profile recruits, high-profile alumni, athletes, who've gone on to play pro sports. One of them, however, is Jerome Kersey. Jerome Kersey, who was a Buck for one season. When I say Jerome Kersey, what do you think, Jim?
I mean, didn't even know he played in Milwaukee, which I guess is the point of the
Neither did I. It's so funny. I forgot all about him, but yes, keep going.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I grew up in Chicago. I mean, so I know him as a Portland Trailblazer.
Absolutely.
Really.
Two-time with Portland Trailblazers, went twice to the NBA Finals. That might be why someone from Chicago knows a little bit about him. But yes, obviously his career is primarily associated with the Portland Trailblazers. He came out of Longwood. He was a second round pick in 1984. He won a ring with San Antonio a little bit later in his career. So he does have championship under his belt. Tragically died, unfortunately, in 2015. Still lived in Oregon. He was only 52 years old, died of a pulmonary embolism caused by a blood clot in February of 2015, unfortunately. But not only was he a player for a year with the Bucks on a team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals, Jim, he was later, which again, something I completely forgot, an assistant coach with his former running mate at Portland, Terry Porter, Wisconsin native, but prominent Portland Trail Blazers alumnus, Terry Porter. When he was head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, Jerome Kersey, an assistant for 1 year. Very interesting situation there, which I'll get to in a minute. But anyway, at Longwood, he was a superstar, as you can imagine, someone of that level. Had all kinds of records, points, rebounds, steals, block shots, you name it. He actually did go back and graduated in 2006. Many, many years later, he finished his degree. But he's a guy who played 17 NBA seasons. I think he took second to Jordan in a slam dunk competition, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously, 11 of those seasons, many of those seasons were with Portland. Went to those finals. His last year is 2000-2001. That's his last year in the NBA, and it is with the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks were headed toward the playoffs. Everyone knows the story of the Eastern Conference Finals that season against the 76ers, the controversial seven-game series. But Jerome Kersey was actually not a part of that. He had left the team because he was left off the playoff roster. So he was strictly a regular season player for them. They signed him because Darvin Ham and Scott Williams had gotten injured, so they needed kind of a power forward type, and so he was there, and he didn't do much. Scored 3.3 points per game, 2.0 rebounds. He was 38, you know, about to be 39 when they signed him. It was a 10-day contract to start with. You know, it was just sort of a brief stay. But again, everybody got healthy. They didn't need him in the postseason, and he kind of was like, okay, I'm out of here. And so he left. But then he came back in 2005 with Terry Porter at the helm. He comes back. He replaces Sam Mitchell on the Bucks staff. Sam Mitchell went on to that year become the Toronto Raptors head coach and ended up being a coach of the year, I believe, in 2007, former Bucks assistant. And Kersey had been director of player programs or something with Portland, briefly wanted to get into coaching. Terry Porter gave him a chance. And so he was here. But then he, along with another assistant, Mike Shuler, were fired kind of unceremoniously by Larry Harris, who was the GM at the time in 2005. It kind of looked like the team was going to move on from Terry Porter. They said, no, they're going to keep Terry Porter, but we're going to fire your assistants, which seemed like an acrimonious situation, a little kind of shrouded in, not clear on every detail there. But then they ended up firing Terry Porter 6 days after that. So it was sort of we go back on that. We're going to actually fire Terry Porter. They wound up hiring, oddly enough, Terry Stotts, full circle. Terry Stotts wasn't here long, but he goes on to become, of course, a successful coach with the Portland Trailblazers. So a lot of Portland love in this one. But Jerome Kersey, I think people remember him. I think they remember him as a member of those Trailblazers teams. You think of Clyde Drexler. Maybe you think of Terry Porter. But then Jerome Kersey comes up, I think, as they obviously had a good thing going. He did spend one season with the Bucks. So there he is, this week's One Quick Buck, Jerome Kersey. All right, Jim, let's move into the best part of the program here. It's our annual ode to anger. It's What's Making Jim Mad.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Yeah, I my regular fight with the gas station pumps, which for our new listeners, was making me mad at a previous point where I had to hit like 17 buttons just to pump gas, and you know, in the cold you can't do it with a glove. So anyway, as I'm wrestling with the gas station pump, you know they got JR, they've got the island of the vacuums and the shampooer, and you know that whole thing where you throw your quarters in and you can kind of clean your car off to the side. So I'm wrestling with the vacuum pump, and I don't understand this, JR, and it makes me mad. It's 2022, and I feel like we've should have moved past this activity as a society. So this person pulls up to the vacuum, right? Island. There's like three garbage cans, right? Like the whole point of that thing is to remove waste from your car, be it with the vacuum or the big giant garbage cans. And I watch this dude just throw all of his garbage out the window onto the parking lot.
What?
And I'm like, I'm watching this, and it's like everything, like, just out, just throwing it on the, and so I'm going to extrapolate a little bit and be like, I don't quite get the people who throw things out their moving car window still. Like, you know, it's usually like a water bottle, a soda bottle, a gas station or a McDonald's cup or whatever. Like, I don't understand that either. Like, I feel like anyone who's like, what? It makes me mad because I don't understand it. It's something to me that just feels like we don't have like the plastic grocery bag or little bag the gas station gives you if you buy something like that you can just like throw your garbage in there and then throw that away. I don't understand. Like none of that makes sense to me, and it just made me mad. I can't speak to why that. I mean, I know why that is, right? Like, we don't need to go down the whole.
People are lazy, Jim.
The whole climate thing, but I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you literally pulled up to the thing that has all the things for your garbage, and then you threw it on the ground. It blew my mind. I couldn't understand. And I'm sitting there. So maybe part of it too is me continuing to wrestle with the gas station pump too. So maybe it was a combination, but I definitely, man, I don't know. I kind of wanted to throw a snowball at that dude.
Oh man, that could have been interesting. That would have been, that would have escalated things a little bit. I'm always puzzled by the mentality of the litterer, whether or not it's next to a garbage can, which I truly can't understand, or why your car is in motion, because there has to be some part of your brain that craves order, because you don't want it in your car, right? You don't want that piece of garbage in your car for any length of time that you'd be willing to throw it out a window while you're driving instead of just waiting until you get to the gas station or home or whatever. So there is something about you that wants like cleanliness and perfection. And the way to achieve that is to throw something outside. Like that feels like a different part of your brain, I guess. I don't really know why someone would be cool with doing something like that as a means of making things cleaner for them. I guess it's a little, you know, little picture environment versus big picture environment and simply not caring about the big picture. That could be. I've always thought that was a bit of a puzzle. I can't say I've ever seen somebody pull up to a garbage can and then just, you know, like halo effect, you know, it's like horseshoes or something. Well, if you're close enough, it counts, right?
I don't know. That was very strange. And it bothered me.
Yes, it should. It should. That is, I think, objectively bothersome. That's not pet peeve territory. That's just, what are you doing, dude? What are you even here for? If you're going to go litter, just litter in the middle of the street. I mean, I don't want that to happen either. But like, why spend all the time to get to the, you know, to the finish line only to just stop short? That's strange. Yeah, that's not great. But every week we'll have something that makes Jim mad. Every week we'll have one quick buck. And again, the rules for that: not an all star, not a retired number, not a player who is on a championship team. But if you have a suggestion for that, feel free to shout me out on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. You can find him at Jim Ozarski. Jim, I think that's all we have for this week. You are not going to Oklahoma City, is that correct? But you are headed out west, right?
Yes, the flight, believe it or not, JR, it's not the easiest to get back and forth from Milwaukee to Oklahoma City and back in a short amount of time in order to get
that
back for the Hawks game.
Yes, I believe that.
I don't have access to a charter flight in a private jet, so Oklahoma City, but yes, I'll be on the West Coast trip, and of course, that's all thanks to our great subscribers over at jsonline.com.
Absolutely. Check out everything Jim is writing at jsonline.com. Breakdowns of every game, all kinds of great stuff. Wrote a really cool thing about Giannis and his shot blocking. We saw him make a pretty great chase down block against the Suns. Of course, his block against the Suns in the NBA Finals will live forever. So he talked about that process a little bit. Thought that was cool. We mentioned it on the last podcast, DeAndre Ayton believing that should not have counted as a block, which is humorous. And you should check all that out at jsonline.com. Find this podcast in the usual spots: Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. If you're listening to us on 97.3 The Game, check us out. Find us. We'll get on your phone, and then you can hear us every single week. But thanks for tuning in wherever you are, and we will catch you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.